Welcome back to another broadcast of the Word for Life radio program. With me in the studio is the co-host of the broadcast, Dr. Les Olala, Chancellor at Northland International University. And Doc, here we sit this morning with our coffee and our Bibles, and we're really at a great time in the year. I mean, this is the time in the year when we are preparing to celebrate one of the most important truths in Christianity. It's not just the birth of Christ, although certainly we think of Christmas as the birth of Christ, but the birth of Christ actually kind of points us to a theological truth that sometimes escapes our notice, and that's the incarnation of Christ, the infleshing of deity.
When you look at Galatians 4:4, says, when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his Son. Sent presupposes preexistence.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was the pre-incarnate Son of God. And in that eternal plan of salvation, it was the Son who had to take on flesh. And we are approaching the Christmas season, and that is the fullness of time. Back in that time when Christ came, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were mm-hmm. under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons.
You know, we miss that. I looked out this morning and there's, you know, the dusting of snow, and you're thinking of gifts and tinsel and tree and all that goes with Christmas, all the fellowship. I know in our church, and I'm sure in churches around the country like ours, there's Christmas programs coming, Christmas messages to prepare, Christmas activities to go to, banquets, fellowships, friends, family. But we really do miss what you were just talking about, that all of this came about as an intention from God to send forth his pre-existing Son in human flesh. And that's why we call it the incarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you stop and think about the whole reason for that, there's no reason we should miss it. There's models for that all throughout the scripture. As you think through what Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians, he talked about the Old Testament being filled up with examples of what this looked like. And the actual passage we're going to look at this morning and the story that we're going to talk about this morning in many ways is an Old Testament example, sort of like a type of what Jesus Christ would actually come and do. It's not necessarily a type of the incarnation per se, but it's a type of the effect and intent of the incarnation.
Well, I believe it is a picture of how we incarnate the incarnation.
There you go.
How do we reflect what the incarnation was really about? Remember when Christ came, made of a woman, made under the law to redeem them that were under the law. In other words, they were those who were in bondage to the law, and they were slaves, and not only were they freed, they were made sons. Well, then how do we live as sons?
Mm-hmm.
That's just what you preach from Romans.
Romans 12,
based 1 on 2. All of this doctrine, how then do we live as children? And the Old Testament picture that we have of Elisha, to me, you would read through this and not even look at this in a light of other than a historical setting.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it is the most beautiful
picture,
Old
like you
Testament
said.
Picture of how the incarnation was incarnated in a man who had abandoned himself to the perfect will of God.
Mm-hmm.
In 2 Kings chapter 4, we have the story, but it'd be good to do a historical background.
Sure.
How did Elisha
get
to where he was? Tell us a little bit, Doc, about Elijah, where he was at the point of Elisha's choosing, where he was in just from Mount Carmel. He went into deep depression mm-hmm. after this great victory, and God sent him in this cave in Horeb. And in the midst of this cave, God spoke to him where Elijah said, I'm the only one left. And God came to Elijah and said, Elijah, I'm in control.
Mm-hmm. I haven't lost any of my power.
I have Hazael chosen to take care of international affairs. Jehu is chosen to take care of national affairs. And by the way, I have your replacement already picked.
Which was Elisha.
Which was Elisha.
And didn't he come down off that out of that cave and go back into ministry, as it were, and on the way finds Elisha?
Yes. And where was Elisha? Elisha was serving.
He was plowing in his field.
He was plowing with the 12th yoke of oxen. He was eating all the dust of all the other yoke. And he was one who was plowing. He was chosen. He left everything because he said, Elisha, you're chosen. And he said, well, let me go home and bid my family well. And he said, what is that to me? Mm-hmm. Do what you have to do, but you are chosen to be my replacement. You do what you have to do now, but you are the one chosen. He goes back and sacrifices everything. He
burns, all 12 of those oxen
yes,
were gone.
He burns every bridge behind him, mm-hmm. never to turn back. And he died to himself at that point. Now we find the story of how he was used to bring life to a dead child.
Actually, he goes on to serve for a long time. He serves Elijah.
Oh, yeah, he serves Elijah. In fact, one of the pictures when the king was saying, is there not a prophet of the Lord? And one of the servants said, yes, Elisha. You know, the one who was pouring water on the hands of Elijah. So Elisha served Elijah for mm-hmm. a period of time.
Mm-hmm. Very sacrificial.
Sacrificially.
Totally invested himself.
A crucial part of this story of how Elisha, in my mind, and by my application, modeled what a believer is to be who already has received by faith mm-hmm. the gift of eternal life through the incarnate
mm-hmm.
Son.
Mm-hmm.
And then Elisha was following Elijah. And what did Elijah do the last day of his life? He made four stops. Picture Elisha trying to keep up with Elijah. So Elijah goes to Gilgal, which is a place of preparation. You remember when the reproach was rolled away
yeah.
on Gilgal?
Oh, yeah.
Then he goes to Bethel, which became the place of prayer. And interesting, Bethel was the heart of idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jericho, the place of battle. And it was Ahab who dedicated that wall to Baal.
And, you know, speaking about
yes.
the incarnation, Bethel becoming the place of battle, it was also the place where God originally came down. Remember that vision of the staircase?
Yes.
With Jacob? That was Bethel.
Yeah, and that's the place of prayer.
And it became a place of idolatry. And here comes Elijah back to that place, in many ways, what you're talking about, to visit a place that should have been and became a place of prayer.
See, I think he had these preacher boy colleges in these three places.
Ah.
I think he was saying goodbye to the preacher boys that he had. I think he had a circuit of training these guys. There were 50 prophets in
right.
training. And I think he made these stops, bidding well, but again, that's my opinion, bidding well those who were...
It would make sense, though.
...where he has started his training bases. And then he went to Jericho, the place of battle, and then Jordan, which is always a picture of death, is what Elisha modeled then when he crossed Jordan. You know, when we talk about somebody's crossing Jordan...
Over Jordan.
Yeah,
right.
They're, in other words, they're entering into the promised land... the picture of death. In Galatians 2:20, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, the incarnate one, who loved me and gave himself for me. So after this, Elisha then has the task, and he said, I want a double portion. I think that was the sign of his humility. He was not wanting to do twice as much as a boasting thing. I think he felt so inadequate that he felt, I've got to have a double portion of what Elijah had to do anything
sure.
for God, because I am incapable.
And that would very much go along with his humility and his spirit.
Yeah, I believe it.
He had a lowly spirit.
Yeah, to interpret it otherwise as a boasting thing would be totally uncharacteristic mm-hmm. of anything that Elisha had reflected before.
I'm just making a connection, because we're talking about incarnating the incarnation. Here's Jesus, the meek and lowly one. Here's Elisha, an Old Testament example of somebody who could have been arrogant, but was very humble and lowly and saying, Lord, I'm going to need twice as much.
Right.
Just to do what your servant did, I'm going to need twice as much of your help as he did.
Yeah, I believe so. Now we go to 2 Kings 4. And what is the setting? Now Elisha comes to the Shunammite. And you remember the prophet chamber came from the idea
yeah.
of this passage where this man of God makes quite an interesting statement. I perceive this as a holy man of God who passes by us continually. It's a good question. How will I be remembered? A holy man of God? A holy woman of God? And this Shunammite woman told her husband, let's build a chamber, a bed, a table, a candlestick for this man and his assistant there to have a place as they go on their itinerant ministry. Now, what was true of this family? They were without child, and God gave them a child, obviously a little older when God gave them the child. But what happened to the child?
Well, eventually the child died.
Yes. Dad was out plowing, working in the field, and the son was out with him and said, "My head, my head." And as the dad said, "Send him to his mother, take him to his mother." And then mother was cradling this boy in her arms, and the child died.
Right.
Now, there are four elements of this drama that we want to get into.
In 2 Kings 4.
In 2 Kings chapter 4, there's a dead child.
Mm-hmm.
Element number one. There's a desperate parent.
The mom.
There is a defective servant.
Gehazi.
Gehazi. And then there's a dedicated servant, and that's Elisha.
And Gehazi was Elisha's servant.
Gehazi.
He did for Elisha what Elisha used to do for Elijah.
Yeah, only with a different heart.
Right.
Gehazi, we find, had some issues. And we want to take this apart and look at this Old Testament story. To me, it's very exciting because you see the panic after the joy of God gave the child. Then you see the heartbreak of this child dying and the panic. And then the mother went to where she believed God was at work. That's why we need to be incarnating the incarnation, because people who are hurting are going to go to someone in whom they believe God is at work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She laid the child on the bed of the man of God, and she went out looking for the man of God, because people in our hurting world are going to turn to people who they believe have contact with God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's go to our churches. Average church Sunday morning. What's there?
Dead child.
Dead child. Desperate parents.
Defective
servants at times.
Oh, yeah.
And some dedicated servants.
Mm-hmm.
Many parents are listening right now. Their hearts are aching because you perceive death in your child. Spiritual death. And church ought to be a place where people can hurt out loud.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is for us as believers, how do we live as a member of that church so that we are approachable and usable to give God's solution?
And this broadcast is going to help us learn the answer to that, Doc, as we study the life of this Old Testament servant. And so as we continue our series, How to Incarnate the Incarnation, I know it'll be a blessing to those who listen. Until the next time that we're together, may the Lord bless you.